Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. Sure appreciate your listening. I'm Scott Linden, your host. We're here in the Cabela's podcast studio, and this week, pretty excited. Don't get to see him often enough, but the guy who breeds the dogs that I hunt at Three Devils Kennel, Jeff Funky, will be joining me on the line. We'll be talking about dog training, versatile breeds, particularly German Wirehairs, and our mutually favorite subject, chukar hunting. So if you're interested in any of that, well, we got a great show in store for you. Also be talking about a whole bunch of other stuff, from public access and a suggestion for where to go, some dog handling tips and techniques, adventures and tactics. It's all here at the Upland Nation. Please subscribe, rate, or review us when you're done listening here, or while you're listening, for that matter. I sure appreciate that. We will be getting to Jeff in just a moment. In the meanwhile, let's take a look at our week. How's yours going? Mine, pretty exciting in a lot of ways. I launched a new initiative on the social media side. I hope you will catch it. Watch some of the videos under the Hunt, Help, Hope moniker. While we are all under house arrest to one degree or another, I'm trying to get everybody looking forward to the season, giving advice, some tips and suggestions, and having a little fun at the same time. Also been scouting some places to hunt. Don't tell the governor, or she will send somebody out to talk with me, and that somebody will have a badge, I'm sure. But sheltering in various places here and there. 2020 is almost upon us. So if you haven't heard yet, finally, the big news around here, we got through all the technical glitches, and Wing Shooting USA, my TV show, is available on Amazon Prime Video now. So if you are hankering for a fix of great bird hunting and dog work, hopefully you will be able to watch it on the big screen or the bigger screen on Amazon Prime Video. Just search for Wing Shooting USA. And speaking of shooting, sageandbreaker.com is where you learn all about the gun care products that are crafted at the highest caliber. My favorite firearm grease and clean lube and protect CLP spray. Very convenient and anti-magnetic, among other things. So most of the dust doesn't stick like it does with some of those other more oily kind of materials. Check your guns. The season is almost here. If you haven't said hello to them for a while, unlock the safe and take a look in there and see if any of them need grease or lubing, protecting, or cleaning at sageandbreaker.com. And dogtra.com is where you learn more about my favorite training collar, the TNB Dual. No toggling from one dog to the next dog, one collar to the other dog. You know, it's all right there on the handheld. Two sets of buttons. Many of the bundles they offer are on sale right now. Check them all out at dogtra.com. All right, so without further ado, let's get to the phone. My friend, my breeder, if you will. You know, it's funny how we say that, but anyway, Jeff Funky is with Three Devils Kennel in Nampa, Idaho. Learn more about his operation at threedevilskennel.com. The guy's a dog trainer who hunts a lot. You know, it's amazing we haven't hunted yet, but we are laying plans for that now. I'm going to leave the rest for you. Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Great to talk with you again. You know, we just don't do this enough. You'd think we would. We're only 5 hours away. So tell me, how's your day going so far?
It's going well. It's we heated up here today, so the dogs are suffering a little bit, as am I. But it's a little early for this kind of weather, but we're dealing with it. So snakes are out already, so watch out for that.
You know, I had that revelation when I was sheltering in another place a couple weekends ago. Hadn't even thought about it yet, but it was hot enough to where, yeah, the big rocky piles over there probably held a rattler or two. Out here, my bane is chipmunks. They will drive me and my dog nuts. You got any advice?
That's a tough one. The dogs, especially your breed of dog, they seem to absolutely love to chase chipmunks. And if they're available, they're going to go after them.
Yeah, my goal in life is to eliminate the chipmunk DNA in our, you know, immediate neighborhood any way I can. And I don't think I'll ever get ahead of the curve on that. But we're not here to talk chipmunks. We're here to talk about dog training and wire hairs and all that other stuff. You know, you've done so many things over the years. I met you first when I was looking for a decent NAVDA dog. And you had impressed me at a few NAVDA tests, either as a judge or you were running a dog or you were just there pitching in, whatever it was. But you've got so many other dimensions to what you're doing. Why don't you kind of describe Three Devils Kennel and the operation and your specialties?
Sure. Yep, you're right on the NAVDA thing. I started that I joined NAVDA in 1984. Started judging sometime in the early 90s. Eventually went on to become a senior judge and a clinic leader and was on the board of directors as director of testing for a number of years. And that pretty much solidified my gun dog addiction and hunting addiction and training addiction. But I had worked at the time. I had got my first wire hair when I was still in college up at the U of I. When I graduated, I actually worked for a bank in commercial banking for 10 years. And when that got ugly, sometime in the 90s, my wife said, "Hey, you like training dogs?" I'd been training a few on the side. She said, "Why don't you start training dogs professionally?" So I did. And the kennel has been full ever since. That has led to a whole lot of things dog related, that's for sure.
Well, you know, one of the things we've talked about off and on is all the other organizations you've been a part of, from the Verein Deutsch Drahthaar North America on down. You've done some NASTRA work. You formed another organization, the Versatile Hunting Dog Federation. How do all of those kind of advance the cause of dog training and quality dog breeding?
Well, the experience I've had through NAVDA, NASTRA, AKC, VDD led me to a couple of conclusions. And one is that the dogs that we have in this country are collectively prized for their wild bird talent. And that was what led to the VHDF and starting that organization, which is very similar to NAVDA in many ways, but just with a little different focus. You know, NAVDA is such a tremendous organization in so many ways, and I doubt it will ever be topped in terms of infrastructure and membership and testing venues and that sort of thing. But in terms of being able to breed a better dog, it leaves a few things to be desired. The cap on the prize one, for example, you know, I think something like 60% of the dogs get a prize one. So if I'm in Idaho and you're in New York, it's kind of hard to tell, you know, if a dog gets a four in something, was that a, you know, 76% for, or was that 110% for? So that led a few of us, myself, Boda Winterhelt, Ed Bailey, and Joe Schmutz, to try to come up with a better program for breeding dogs. And so we started that in 2007, and it's still in existence today, and I utilize the program for my breeding, and I found it to be absolutely fantastic as far as allowing me to select dogs with a greater amount of pressure and increase the breeding program at a much faster pace. Now, having said that, you're not going to find a lot of active breeders in the organization at this point in time. It just, you know, we started at the depths of the recession or Great Recession, whatever you want to call it, 2008, 2009. And so most bird dog organizations took a hit then and are slowly rebuilding. Along the same lines, also started German Wire Hair Alliance with a friend of mine, a fellow breeder by the name of Kelly Jobes over at Bone Point Kennels. And that has been steadily progressing as well. And that's your standard alliance, I think, that's in effect nowadays, that you're seeing a group of gun dog breeders getting together, agreeing to a minimum standard, which is a pretty low bar, but at least it allows folks not to reinvent the wheel every single time they get a new dog or you get a new breeder involved. And so that, I think, that's allowing us to share genetics, do much more collaborative type of work, and just be communicating with each other about, you know, not only the good things, but the bad things that pop up. I'll give you an example of that too. When we first started, we didn't know, we found out that the wire hair has a pretty high incidence of hypothyroidism. And I had no idea because we didn't have it in our dogs, but one of the breeders out west had it, and one, a couple of the breeders in the Midwest had it. So we instituted a thyroid standard. Dog has to be declared normal by OFA. And we pretty much eliminated that problem. So.
Wow. You know, on as most people will recall, I had a nice long talk with Bob Ferris, and the idea of an alliance, of course, came up there as well for the Poodle Pointer guys. And what I look at those as is two ways. If you're old enough to remember the Good Housekeeping seal of approval, to a degree, that's what you're getting there, because there is a slightly higher bar. The quality control is a little bit more stringent, if you want to call it that. The other thing is there is an element of professionalism, I think, with every member of the alliance, both yours and in the Poodle Pointer world. And that is another indicator or one way to have a little bit more confidence in the dog you're getting and the breeder you're getting it from. Which leads me to the number one question, which is a little bit late in the session already, and that is, what do you love most about this world?
That's got to be chasing those red-legged birds that I think are your probably favorite as well.
Yeah, there is nothing like it. But you're a little bit closer to that country than I am. In fact, you can make day trips most of the time, I think.
I do day trips. Yeah, I hunt chukar over 100 days a year, and I rarely hunt the same spot twice in a season. The only time I do that is when the birds get heavy on winter range and they're all kind of in the same spot. But yeah, we do that, and I like to hunt mallards. If the weather's bad, you know, if it's too muddy to get out in the Owyhees, then we're gonna hunt ducks.
By the way, those are the Owyhees over there in South Dakota, for anybody who's looking for a more exact location. So that's where I would start my search. No, we'll see you there. We'll both see you there. That's beautiful country, and there's plenty of room for the three people who are willing to go there. So how does training a hunting dog differ from training a hunt test or a trial dog, Jeff?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's there's quite a bit of difference. You can rely on the natural talent of the dog in a hunting situation with wild birds, because essentially the dog cannot harm themselves with wild birds, or nor can you harm them unless you're pushing a button on an e-collar or something like that. The dogs learn respect for the birds, and it's self-taught. I always tell people, I've developed a training program over 30 years that is pretty basic but very effective. And I kind of have three golden rules that I, when I train a dog for somebody to be steady to wing, shot, and fall, I pretty much send them home with those three golden rules. And if they follow those, they'll have a better bird dog on wild birds than 98% of the people out there.
All right. So what's the number one rule?
Well, you got to teach the dog. I use a technique to train the dog called stop the shock. And it's not quite what it sounds. You could do it with tone, but it's basically a silent whoa. The shock collar works well because you can put it on level one, low level. And just like you teach a dog to verbally whoa, you teach them to stop to that low level shock or tone or whatever you want to use. So now you have a generic silent command that you can use at any distance. So rule number one is, I expect the dog, when it goes on point, it needs to stay there and not move until I get there. In other words, no self-relocating. And there's always exceptions to the rule. That's why we have rules. But on chucker, that's pretty solid. Or any covey bird, huns, that sort of thing. You know, a pheasant's going to be different. But think covey birds like chucker or huns. So once I get to the dog, if I move ahead of the dog and nothing flushes, I know the birds have run off like they typically do. So you relocate the dog. And rule number two is, when they relocate, they have to do it slowly. And like some people would call a creep or a catwalk or whatever. And both of those can be easily facilitated with the stop to shock, because if the dog is on point, and I don't care if you can see the dog or if you use a GPS or a beeper, you know if he moves, you can stop him with a low level shock. And this is not a punishment, this is just a communication with the dog, and they'll, when I train them to do it, they'll stop and wag their tail.
Yeah, you know, I've often described that low level stimulation, is what the collar companies like to call it, as a memory jogger. It just interrupts whatever the thought process is, you know, breaking the rules. So
yeah, it says, hey, I'm here and I care.
Yeah.
But I developed this because I look back on all the hunts that I had, and what would ruin the hunt? Well, one of them would be, you know, telling your buddy, stop your dog, so we can get up there and get a shot. The second one is, when they relocate them, they burst ahead at full speed with their ears pinned back and flush up birds everywhere out of range. And then the third one is no chasing. So you take away the chase. That's a reward for the dog. And a dog that is allowed to chase can self-reward. They can reward themselves when they sneak off and do naughty things. So if you do those three things, you're going to be in business.
It sounds simple. We both know it's not, but we're all striving for it with all of our dogs. And it, you know, if you boil it down like that, then all of a sudden it does become a little bit easier to at least try to implement. What about the rest of your training philosophy? I mean, you know, if you've been in it a while, you've seen and done just about everything. You've seen all sorts of dogs. Can you frame all that into 25 words or less?
I think most of the really good trainers all have the same answer to that. And you know, when you get a puppy, you got to let it be a puppy and learn how to hunt pretty much unimpeded. And everything you teach it is a suggestion. You stack the deck in your favor by, you know, maybe teaching the dog to whoa before you feed it or go through a door. And then once the dog has had many opportunities to point and retrieve and hunt whatever you're going to hunt, then you put the controls, the obedience on the dog. And after you do that, the dog's natural cooperation after about season two or three is going to come out, and you're going to have a dog that you never have to say a word to unless you want to, and you'll never have to correct it, and you will hunt that dog until it can't hunt anymore with, you know, very few mistakes and very few issues.
You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. That's Jeff Funky with Three Devils Kennel in Nampa, Idaho. German wire-haired pointers in particular, but Jeff, you probably would take anybody's dog if they were the right, you know, the right breeding and the right attitude of the human as well. You train other breeds, don't you?
Sure, you bet.
But you've probably not lowered yourself to like the Flushing breeds yet, have you? Are you that desperate?
I only train pointing
just,
breeds.
Just for the record, that was a little joke, everybody. Okay, don't send me an email on that one. But let's talk about the breeding side of things, because you know people don't understand. You know, they argue about the price of a puppy. You hear this every day, probably. You know, well, I can get a puppy cheaper than that. Sure, you can. Of course, you can go down to the shelter and on the right day they'll give you a dog, but there's got to be a reason to breed the way you do. And believe me, I know it works. I still contend that I have the best looking German wire-haired pointer in the universe, but you may have a couple over there as well. So what's the philosophy on breeding for you?
Yeah, the you know, breeding, there's a lot of different ways to do it. And I've come in many ways full circle breeding dogs and trying to figure out what the best way to do it is, you know, big, small, aggressive, cooperative, you name it. And I think the key is balance. Everything needs to be balanced. And that actually, that brings me to a thought that came up when we were creating the testing rules for VHDF, Versatile Hunting Dog Federation, which I think the rules are fantastic, and I think they allow for a great test. But we were, you know, most of these systems like NAVDA and the German systems, or European systems, I should say, even more so, place a particular emphasis on a particular category. For example, the European systems, it's all about tracking at an early age. They don't even really care if the dog points. Whereas out here, pointing has a pretty high index or multiplier, as we'd call it in NAVDA, with desire having a very high multiplier and cooperation having a very low multiplier. And we were designing those rules, and of course, Bodo was insistent that you know, certain things have a certain multiplier. And myself, coming from NAVDA and somewhat, I spent 10 years in VDD. I kind of went along with that. And then one day, Ed Bailey, and I know you know him well, said, why do we need a multiplier? What makes one of these characteristics more important than the other? And I thought about that, and I said, you know what? He's right. And of course, he did that numerous times through the 2 years that we took to build the rules for that organization, the testing protocols. And it was a real eye opener, but that one in particular, everything is just as important as the other. Cooperation is just as important as desire. And so early on, I bred for desire. And we got dogs that, you know, maybe they cared more about getting a bird or game in their mouth than they cared about pleasing you. And that's all changed for me over the last 15 years. And I think our dogs are a lot better for the average person now. You know, not everybody has can spend a day, a week at the NAVDA the training session with e-collars and all of that stuff to rein the dog in. So that's my philosophy right now. And so we look for that, and we utilize our current testing venue to identify those. And of course, that's a minimum bar. I hunt over 100 days, so I get to see not only the dogs that are bird savvy and produce game and handle game, but I get to see all that in many different ways. So,
well, we're going to talk about getting to see that in the field after this short break. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden. That's Jeff Funky with Three Devils Kennel. We're talking everything dog breeding, dog training. Chukar hunting is high on our list. So, Jeff, if you'll put your feet up and relax for about 60 seconds, I'll be back at you. And in the meanwhile, the rest of you, pay close attention. We are brought to you in part by Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food. Dr. Tim's, DRTIMS.com, is where you learn more about all their formulations. I've been a believer for a long time, and I want you to be one too. So I've made arrangements for you to get 30% off your first order. Just go to DRTIMS.com and use the code UPLANDNATION at checkout. You know, the average overall protein content of Dr. Tim's foods is 87% animal derived. No fillers, none of that stuff some of the other cheaper foods will use to up their protein content. It doesn't really help unless it's animal derived. Learn more about them at drtims.com. And if you can hear me now, you can thank your hearing protection in most cases. Learn more about hearing protection at ESPAmerica.com. ESP stands for Electronic Shooter's Protection. I learned a long time ago, every time you shoot a gun without proper protection, you are assaulting your ears with up to 150 decibels of deafening sound. Now, repeat exposure over 90 decibels will result in permanent hearing loss. So, take care of your ears. They're the only two you have, and there is no magic wand. There is no fairy dust. There is no potion you can drink, inject, or snort that will help your hearing. So, take care of it before it needs help. And that is my signal to you, Jeff, to come on back. This is our Handle It section, where we talk about all the things I've learned the hard way about bringing up Flick so that the rest of us don't have to. Brought to you by Cabela's, fast and free two-day shipping on orders of $50 or more at Cabela's.com. Jeff Funky, Three Devils Kennel, are you with me?
I am. And hey, Scott, before you go on to the handling, I want to bring something else up before I forget, because your commercial for Dr. Tim's dog food just reminded me. So I got your pemmican bars.
Oh yeah.
And listen, I had two epiphanies with these things. So I already tried them, and one of them was I just had a litter of puppies, and a problem when you have a litter of puppies is, you know, the female is so exhausted and just doesn't feel great overall. They don't want to eat. So what we typically do is we bait them with canned dog food or something of that nature. The danger in doing that is there's so much moisture in that canned food, it fills them up, and the caloric density is so little that they don't get enough calories in their system to produce enough milk for, say, 10 or 11 puppies.
Wow.
And so I just had this litter, and I was having that problem with this female, Alice. And so I gave her part of this Crunch pemmican bar, and she ate the whole thing without any issues. and the caloric density in this thing is incredible. So she got in a very small, because they don't want to fill up their stomach.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She got in a very small bite, a lot of calories, and she can drink all the water she wants to produce milk. So I think that's going to be a great use for those. And then the other thing along that line that hit me, 90% of my clients, and you probably find the same thing, and you probably even have to do it on the road when you're traveling and hunting, the dogs don't want to eat because they haven't been properly trained to eat, most of them. People bait them or supplement with a canned food or put goodies in there, which is mostly water. Canned dog food has almost no calories in it. You could do the same thing with this pemmican bar. Just put it in their food or feed it to them to get their appetite jump started. And I haven't tried that yet, but this is, you know, I'm thinking that's going to work well for that too. So anyway, sorry to sidetrack you on that, but I wanted to say that because I just went through that. So
well, anytime you want to give me a ringing endorsement like that, you're welcome to take a minute or two on my podcast, Jeff. Thank you. But you just hit on the two things that are most important about it, and that's exactly right, especially when traveling. And you know that is a real issue. Maybe it's just our breed, I'm not sure, but you cannot get enough food into a dog's belly at the right times on a long hunting trip. So you got to do something. And this is one concentrated way to get good healthful calories into the dog. So on that note, thank you. And those of you who are listening, who you want to learn more about this, go to dogenergybar.com. End of commercial. speaking of puppies, so that was my topic for today. And, you know, in 25 words or less, Jeff, if there is something we should or should not for sure do in the first 4 months of a puppy's life, what would be at the top of your list?
Yeah, most people get in a hurry to do everything with the puppy, and they just need to learn to trust you and learn your mannerisms. And so I would say the biggest thing that I would not do is try to, you know, train the puppy to do ultimately what you want it to do, and that's to be a bird dog. Because at that stage of their life, one bad experience can ruin them for life. I can give you examples, whatever you. They don't have the resiliency to overcome it. So people, for example, let's say you want to start your water work and the puppy falls in the water off the dock and it before it knows how to swim and it panics and everybody panics and now the dog's afraid of the water. You throw a marked retrieve for the dog and it goes a little too far under your neighbor's hot fence, your hot wire fence, and the dog hits it on the way to that retrieve. And now it won't retrieve. Just wait until the dog has some resiliency, some backbone. And then when those little mistakes happen that we all make, it won't care so much. And that's your number one thing that I would look at.
Boy, I love that. Yeah. I've never heard it described that way, but it's so true. The dog, in effect, will be more forgiving later on, but it has to build up that, I'll call it immunity. You called it resilience. Whatever it is, they got to have more of it before they're ready for some of those tough ones. I'll never forget I got a panicked phone call late last summer from the guy in our training group who had the very youngest dog. And that dog was out at a preserve and he called that night and said he wouldn't retrieve. He just could not bring them all the way back to me. And I had to remind him. His dog was 6 months old And, you know, a flawless retrieve is something I'm still striving for at 2.5 years old with Flick. Somewhere in the middle is probably better. But you know, these are the reality checks that we need from pros like you. That's Jeff Funke from Three Devils Kennels. I'm Scott Linden with the Upland Nation podcast. You know, if you can take yourself over to that that mountain range and river basin we both love so much, let's talk about chukar hunting for just a bit. I just wrote an article for Shooting Sportsman magazine on the subject. I hope you don't find it too misleading when you do get it. But I tried to hit on all the important stuff. And one of the things I was asked to delve a little deeper into was, you start the hunt where? At the bottom of the canyon, at the top of the canyon, halfway up the ridge? Get us started on the right foot, Jeff.
Sure. I tend to start at the bottom. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, I don't want to walk uphill at the end of the day. And number two, the birds are typically high, but as you gain altitude and you get to the level of the birds, they fly down. So you're going to work your way down in some type of a pattern, you know, back and forth, side hilling. And there's exceptions to everything. There are places where you can start to hunt at the top, but you're going to see a lot more action if you go ahead. You got to commit. You know, I'll never forget years ago, there was a guy that was in the sporting dog world, and you know who he is, and doesn't matter who he is, but I used to take him hunting, and we'd always walk to the top of this hill, and it was quite a struggle for him to get up there. And then we'd go along the top, push all the birds off, and we'd start, you know, zigzagging back down, side hilling back down, and each little bluff, you know, the birds are going to hold up at, and it's not too hard to figure out where they're going to go. And then one day it was, I don't remember, I think it was bad weather or something, and I had a little sneaky back way, and I drove him to the top of that hill. He was livid. He said, "You mean for 10 years I've been walking up that mountain and you could drive me to the top of this?" And I said, "Yeah, I could have, but, you know, that wouldn't have been any fun for you." So,
oh, God.
Anyhow. But, yeah, if you're by yourself, you know, you can run shuttles. And if one guy's willing to do the – and I tend to do a lot of that nowadays with people just to try to help them out. But, you know, there's no substitute for starting at the bottom of the mountain, working your way up. That allows the dogs to stretch out, get their noses cleared out, get the piss and vinegar out of them. And when you get to the top, you're generally in business. And then the party starts and you start hunting your way back to the truck.
And like you said, once they're up on top, the most likely thing they're going to do is fly straight back down. And when they do that, you mentioned these rocky bluffs, and sometimes it's a bowl, but most of the time it is some kind of clump of rocks of one sort or another. Have you found that they'll hold in that pretty well?
If it's a escape spot, they will hold like you can't believe. So I'm gonna give away one of my best kept secrets here. This is not easy to do, but these birds, they have a plan. They don't just fly down the hill willy-nilly. They're going to a place. And they all know where that place is, and you don't. And you can't see it, because typically they'll fly, you know, left or right or below a bluff, and you can't see. And a lot of times it's not very far from where you're at. They swing around and come back up. But if you can figure that out, if you can either watch them, I actually carry a monocular with me, so I can see at a distance, like just a little pin clip one that I pull out of my pocket. And if you can figure out their escape spot, And if you, when you go there, they are shocked. They're so shocked. They're like, they hold tight, and that's when I get my best shooting and my best dog work.
I will strive to shock a covey of chuckers this season, and maybe you'll be the witness. Oh, that's great. You know, I found this past season in particular, and I don't know why, just a weird season, but I wing clipped, you know, three or four birds that ended up gliding down like they always do. And, you know, you go down and you look and you look and you look, and then you give up and you're really mad. But every time I marked that spot on the GPS, came around in a big circle later that day. By that time of day, the breeze was going downhill, so I was bringing Flick back up into the wind in the little canyons, and we found all of those birds. Because once they got wing clipped, they hunkered down and they didn't move. Is that something I'd never noticed before, or is that what they do?
I think what you're finding there is you've had time for the scent to disperse and give your dog a better opportunity to find them. Because when they fly down that hill, they're washed of scent, and they land, they usually pile into a spot, and yeah, they don't move. And I had that exact thing happen to me. I think it was actually the last day of this last season, and it was even worse than that, because I'd shot a bird and it was down and the dog retrieved it, and I muffed the retrieve, not the dog, and it jumped up, and it's in my hand, and it jumped up and it flew down the hill with one wing broken, and it was able to fly around a rock outcropping and out of my sight. And this was steep country. And I went down to where I thought it was, and I looked all around, couldn't find it, did the exact same thing you just described, hunted off another ridge and came back below, working my way back up to the truck, and boom, the dog's gone point, and there it is. And I think that's because that bird is now sitting there for an hour or whatever it is, and that scent has time to disperse.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly right. And my takeaway from that little lesson is, even you blow it once in a while.
Don't think that that doesn't happen. Pretty much, I look like a novice just about every time I go out. So
at one point in time, it's easy to do when you're standing on one leg tipping over the cliff, and you're out of breath at the same time. You know, if you had to offer up any more chucker hunting advice for people who maybe have wanted to try it but have not for any number of reasons, what would you distill it down to?
Well, you know, chucker hunting, what I found is it's the same as any other hunting, but it's different. So, in other words, years ago in Nobbs, I met a guy who, he was a sea duck hunter out off the coast of Maryland. And we sat up one night and talked about his sport and my sport. And in the end, the sport itself and how you got there and where you did it was different. But the tools that the dog needed and that you needed were the same. So you got to be in shape. You got to be persistent. You got to be hopeful. That's the creed of every bird hunter, right? Hopeful. And your dog has to be in shape, and your dog has to be genetically sound, and your dog has to be well-trained. So you have that, and all you got to do is go somewhere where there's birds, and there's quite a few areas out there that have birds.
Well, let's talk about that for just a moment, because I had to do a whole sidebar on that for this article I just wrote. You know, if you were going to describe great chucker habitat, what would be the main ingredients?
Well, for chucker, you got to have two main ingredients for chucker: rocks and water. And I think chucker got to stand on a rock at least twice a day.
Yeah,
and they typically water twice a day. Now, having said that, I know where there are birds where there's nothing but sagebrush, but typically they like that vertical real estate, and they evolved in that type of real estate. So that's where they do the best. And that's not always the easiest country to hunt. But and they are not like a quail until later in the year when there's a lot of green up. They have to have surface water to survive. So whereas a desert quail does not. But chukar, so you have to be somewhere near a water source. And that's why these I won't mention them, but these huge reservoir systems are good places to start, because they have an endless supply of water and you have a lot of vertical real estate.
You didn't mention what I would have added to that list of ingredients, and that's the primary food source, whether it's green or seeds, cheatgrass. You find them eating anything else out there? I never find much except late in the winter.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they don't need to. Cheatgrass is definitely a pretty good feed source for them. They'll eat both the seed head and the green shoots. Cheatgrass is a fall germinating plant. A lot of people don't realize most of the grasses germinate in around April 15th, but cheatgrass germinates in the fall, which is why it's so pervasive, because it's tall by the time the other grasses even start to germinate. But no, chukar eat, they dig a lot of tubers and roots, wild onions. If you can find an area with wild onions, man, the chukar are going to hit that. And a lot of little, I'm not a scientist who can identify a lot of the stuff that I find in the craw of a chukar, but a lot of these little red tubers, and they obviously dig those up, and then any seed, of course, any seed of any weed or grass, they will eat. So,
wow,
they don't have to have cheatgrass.
Well, that's good to know. And actually, it's interesting. This past season, I did find birds in a lot of places where there were not a lot of cheatgrass. So, you're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden. That's Jeff Funky with Three Devils Kennel, fanatic chukar hunter. Welcome to the club. Actually, you should be saying that to me, I think. But German wirehair breeder, etc., etc. Jeff, check me on this. Last chukar season was also a really good Hungarian partridge season for me. Was it my imagination, or did you find that as well?
No, I agree with you. I found more and more huns. I think that the winter of 17 boosted our hun population out west here. And of course, you were seeing the offspring of those birds last year. The huns do really well and with a lot of snow and moisture, whereas the chukar, are a little more arid. They require kind of a nice balance. They like chukar like a lot of moisture in the early late winter, early spring, and then they like it dry. But huns can handle quite a bit of snow, and that's a anecdotal, evidence on my part, but I think that's why we saw such an increase in the hun population.
You've alluded to your duck hunting as well, and so maybe from an expert, we need at least a version of a definition of a versatile hunting dog. You want to take a swing at it?
Sure. Yeah, no, that's an easy one. We've been looking at that for a lot of years. But versatile dog is not only a dog that is capable of doing whatever you want it to do in terms of gun work, water, field, forest. I'm also, by the way, I'm a diehard blue grouse hunter. We can get into that at some later point if you want, but They got to do the water. But most importantly, and this came to mind with a discussion from a breeder friend of mine from Europe. And he put it this way. He said, a versatile dog is meant to be the best at what you want it to be. So I'm a chucker hunter, and I can breed them to hunt chucker, but I can still hunt ducks with actually quite a bit of horsepower in the water. And the guy from North Dakota might be a duck hunter, but he likes to hunt sharptail less than ducks. So his specialty, he has the best duck dog, but he can still hunt sharptail with that dog. And I think that's the key, is being able to breed them to your specific area of expertise or what you prefer, but you can still go. I've had people amazed. I've dropped dogs out on Bob White quail or Arizona quail back before I ever hunted them. And the very first covey, in fact, I'll never forget, I was hunting with a 76-year-old guy who'd been hunting desert quail all his life, and I had a dog point his first covey, and he goes, "I've never seen a dog ever point its first covey of desert quail." And he did it because he was a versatile dog. And so that's the key.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there is there's so much truth to that. You know, if you had to narrow it down to one bucket list hunt that you haven't been on yet, what would it be?
Well, I guess I'm going to have to say, as soon as you get my physical training program up to a high enough level, I've got to go try to shoot a snowcock off a point in Nevada.
Now that's a tall order. Pardon the pun. Just getting there is a 10,000 foot climb, and then the pointing part might be the hardest. Maybe not for your dog, but for some. But you've probably done a little bit of the homework. You know exactly where we're going, don't you?
I do, and I don't know, that may not happen, but I've hunted Mexico. For anybody who hasn't done it, is awfully fun. They've got bird numbers down there like we haven't had here for many, many years because of the farming practices. But I guess the next one, probably maybe a little more realistic, would be, and I have a client who does this, so it's a possibility, but maybe a Paradis hunt down in Uruguay.
Yeah, yeah. I've turned that down back in the day. Don't ask me why. I was so silly at the time, but I was. But it was at the time, it was the right thing to do. But I'm like you. I wouldn't mind trying that. Perdiz is an intriguing little bird.
And I think that would just be for the dog work, because yeah. I'm into two. I don't care about numbers, but I care about the challenge, and I care about the. That's why I love that. That high desert country so much. I care about the scenery, and I care about the dog work. And so, things that don't involve dog work, you won't see me doing.
Yeah, yeah, same here. That's part of the reason I turned that trip down, is it was mainly an Argentinian dove hunt, and I don't see any real thrill in shooting 1,000 rounds in a day.
But no, that's shooting and killing. That's not hunting.
Yeah. So we're getting towards the bitter end here. Jeff Funke of Three Devils Kennel, trainer extraordinaire, breeder of great German wire-haired pointers. If you had to leave us with one more bit of advice as bird hunters and dog owners, what would it be?
I at this stage in my life, I think my advice there would be to embrace all your fellow sportsmen. You know, there's so many different groups, and we're all, our DNA is 99.9% the same. We want to be able to enjoy the outdoors, enjoy our animals, and hunt. And there's so many people that want to take that away. So whether you're talking a German breed club or a NAVDA or an AKC or whoever it is, you know, be nice to those people and help them out, because we're all in this together. We're not the enemy of each other. We have a lot of enemies, trust me. A lot of them in San Francisco, a lot of them in Washington, D.C. So, you know, help out your fellow sportsmen. And I got to say, you know, you, on that same note, you make me feel guilty because you do so much for, you know, the sporting world, not just gun dogs and upland hunting, but everything. And, you know, sometimes I'm over here in my little world just trying to train a few dogs for people. But that would be the thing that I consider to be most important right now.
Well, you're very kind, and a great suggestion for everybody. I'll never forget having stood up in a meeting many years ago where the elk hunters were yelling at the bow hunters, were yelling at the hound guys, were yelling at the fly fishers. And I reminded them of what Ben Franklin said many, many years before: if we don't all hang together, we will assuredly hang separately. And it's even more so today than it was back then when we were fighting the bear and cougar initiatives here in Oregon.
Yep. But that's well said. And you don't know how things can go full circle. And I'll give you a modern day example of that. Before they reintroduced wolves into Idaho, the hound hunters who would run bear in the fall, they get a spring season and a fall season. And I used to be a hound hunter, by the way. In fact, I have a Boone and Crocker record on a mountain lion, but that's not the point. We used to be at each other's throats in September, the hound hunters, and they were hunting bear and we were hunting blue grouse. And they would get so mad because we'd go through an area, you know, and push bear out of there. And now we are best of buddies because of the wolves. We sit in each other's camp at night and drink beer because they want to know where the wolves are. Their dogs are particularly vulnerable. But we also want to know where the grouse are. And they've got that information as well. So that's something to keep in mind about why you want to keep all of these different organizations. We're all in this together, and we all have ultimately the same goal.
Words to the wise, sometimes is harder than other times, but we'll get through it together. Jeff Funke, threedevilskennel.com is where you learn more about upcoming litters, training philosophy, lots of great pictures of country that I'm lucky enough to spend some time in. With that, I'm going to thank you one more time, Jeff, for all the puppies you've sent my way. I am just enamored with the breed. I'm enamored with your lines. Thank you so much. Hopefully this fall you'll be able to see Flick at work in person. In the meanwhile, thanks so much for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast. Have a great evening.
Yep, thanks for having me, Scott. And we have got to get together to do some more hunting.
Okay, now we have a lot of witnesses, so let's do it.
All righty.
And don't you go away, because we have got a lot more coming down the pike, including a public access spot that I think you might enjoy. Let me just put it this way. It's a little off the beaten path, but it's something that you might want to make a note of. In the meanwhile, though, make note of Gunner Kennels and their website, gunner.com. They are the kennels of choice here at the Linden Ranch. And this is the last day to get your free tie-down straps. Go to gunner.com and search around for that with every purchase. Starting May 1st and only for 4 days, you can get $75 off all kennels. Make a note of their website address one more time, gunner.com. Tie-down straps today, May 1 through 4, $75 off all kennels. Financing also available, all at gunner.com. And at doctor.com, you can get 10% off any purchase over $200. Just use the code SLUN10. Free shipping on anything over $200 as well, including the TNB dual collar system. I love mine because I don't have to toggle back and forth on the screen. Two sets of buttons, one for each collar. No toggling. It's a no-brainer, and that's about how much brain I have, especially by the end of a podcast. I'm using it all up, going to the wall for you here. And that is my rendition of Woody Guthrie's classic, This Land Is Your Land. Now, just joking, all you musicologists out there, I know the difference. Don't worry. But it is our public access feature brought to you by findbirdhuntingspots.com. Go there. Do me a favor. Sign up for the mailing list. I might do you a favor and send you a shotgun. Yeah, that's the prize. Just sign up for the mailing list. All right, this is my chance to talk about places that are worth a look that don't cost you any more than the cost of your license and some gas to get there. And yes, in Texas, there is publicly accessible private land, just like in a lot of the other states. Even though some of the ranches are so big there that you can see them from space. For $48, you can buy yourself a public hunting permit, and it opens thousands of acres of walk-in access to private property. You get the maps online, you can buy your public hunting permit online in Texas, then start packing your rig and heading for Texas late in the season. All right, one more time. If you can hear me now, you know it's because your hearing is still pretty darn good. Keep it that way with ESPAmerica.com, electronicshootersprotection.com is where you learn more about them and all the ways they can help you maintain your hearing as well as what's left of your sanity. And with that, I'll bid you a fond farewell. I'm Scott Linden, your host here at the Upland Nation Podcast. Hope you'll tell your friends about it. Hope you'll share the posts that I do on Facebook about our broadcasts. I hope you'll rate or review the Upland Nation Podcast wherever you get your podcast. That would be most helpful. Yeah, we are still on a short lead, but there is some light at the end of the tunnel, to mix a few metaphors. Until we're allowed off our leash, it's a good time to reacquaint ourselves with family, friends, and dogs, and get ready for the season. Lots to do. Check out the blog. Check out the podcast. Learn more. Watch Wing Shooting USA on Amazon Prime Video. And get wired yourself for the upcoming season. Keep the faith out there. We will be hunting. Thanks again for listening. I'm Scott Linden. Have a great day.